Welcome to Notes from the Electronic Cottage. I'm Jim Campbell. Well, the season is changing today, so it's a good time to take a look at some of the things that have gone on in the tech world that we may have missed as we were enjoying summer in Maine. During the halcyon days of summer, many folks were wearing t-shirts and shorts or other lightweight clothing. And also, many were carrying a smartphone or maybe just a music player while sitting on the beach or picking tomatoes. One of the problems with those little digital wonders is that they need electricity to run. And if a person forgets the charger or is in a place with no electrical service, those miracle devices soon become dead weight. But good news is on the way. Researchers at North Carolina State University have been busy working on ways to convert our body heat into electric current so that one day, in the not-too-distant future, we'll be able to just wear the right t-shirt or armband and connect a phone or whatever to a little plug in the garment and charge that digital device as we go about our daily business. This tech is still in the lab, but odds are we'll be seeing this kind of clothing before too long. And, in case you're wondering, it turns out that the most efficient place to wear something to generate electricity is on the upper arm. Who knew? Meanwhile, on a recent program, we looked at the European Union's recent Right to be Forgotten rules that have ordered search engines like Google to remove links to some information about non-public persons who petitioned to have those links to information about their past removed from search results. But just what would a searcher see in their search results if Google or some other search engine has to remove links that refer to a specific person or event? Should the searcher know that there is actually information available on their search terms, but laws have made links to that information unavailable? What about searches that refer to materials that some country has found to be illegal for one reason or another? Those reasons could range from access to writings on Hitler in some European countries to sites that the U.S. claims are violating copyright. Now there's a new web error code, 451, that indicates that material is, quote, unavailable for legal reasons, end quote. We're all too familiar with web error code 404 that indicates, quote, page not found. This new code 451 is part of that 400 family of error codes approved by the Internet Engineering Steering Group. It's named 451, of course, in honor of Ray Bradbury's science fiction novel of censorship, Fahrenheit 451. 451 degrees, you may recall, is the temperature in Bradbury's novel at which books will burn. So, will websites or search engines use the new error code 451 to indicate that information about a particular topic or person exists, but that for some legal reason we can't get to it? It's early days yet, so we'll have to wait and see. If you do come across such an error message, send a little note saying where you encountered the error code to info@weru.org and put Electronic Cottage in the subject line. We'll see what we can find out about it. And while we're on the subject of censorship, Banned Books Week starts in a couple of days. Here in the U.S., self-proclaimed bastion of free speech, it may be surprising that there are still efforts, often successful, to keep certain books out of libraries and schools, and on occasion, even to burn them. It wasn't so long ago, you may recall, that folks in Lewiston took it upon themselves to burn a pile of Harry Potter books because those books dealt with witchcraft in the eyes of the burners. If you'd like to learn more, including lists of some of the books that have been banned at one place or another here in the U.S., head on over to bannedbooksweek.org or stop by your local library. You won't find any error code 451s there. Some of us have noticed that there's an election coming up. We may have also heard that a major party presidential candidate is hinting that he thinks that the vote in the upcoming election might be, quote, rigged. That, of course, is something that politicians all over the world say if they're not feeling too good about their prospects of getting elected. But for reasons that have nothing to do with that candidate's bluster, there's an increasing concern about the validity of the electoral voting process in this and future elections here in the U.S. The reason is technology. In the wake of the hanging chads fiasco in the 2000 presidential election, Congress passed the Help America Vote Act that allocated large amounts of money to states to update their voting machines. In many cases, states moved to electronic voting machines to use in some part of the vote casting and counting process, though about three-quarters of voters will at least begin the voting process on paper in the 2016 election. The most counting will be done by machines. But the electronic voting machines purchased over a decade ago and still in use today have some serious problems. The Brennan Center for Justice at NYU in September of 2015 issued a report called simply, quote, America's Voting Machines at Risk, end quote. Wired Magazine recently ran a story on the subject with the headline, quote, America's Voting Machines Are Sitting Ducks, end quote. What? Why? Well, for one thing, most of these 12 to 15-year-old machines are running on the Windows XP operating system. You know, the one that hasn't had any security updates from Microsoft since April of 2014. And the list goes on, a list that's much more worrisome since the Democratic National Committee was hacked and since at least two state voter list systems have been probed by hackers. This is not comforting news in an atmosphere of huge divisions in the country that are likely to result in a very close presidential election and in potential shifts of power from county governments all the way up to Congress. What can we do? For one thing, we can be really, really careful at every step of the vote counting process and make sure to audit the results of any election counts, which half the states already do, but half don't. That is for the short term. For the long term, we need to realize that digital technology changes fast, that things go out of date and need to be replaced, and that constant vigilance is part of using technology well. We'll try to remain vigilant about the intersection and effects of digital technology on our everyday lives, right here on future editions of Notes from the Electronic Cottage.